Snetter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA1977 on Twitter.
Nimmer Snetter, just talking to teachers.
Hello and welcome to this week's Nailers Netter in association with the Teacher Development Trust. And this week I'm in conversation with Tom Rogers. And we're going to discuss Tom's journey through teaching into leadership, Teach Me Icons, the development and sale of resources, and his interviews with school leaders. We'll also talk about Tom's hugely popular and influential blogs and his Rebel Education podcast. In the podcast pedagogy section this week, I'm looking again at non-education books and discussing The Ragged Trousered Philanthropists by Robert Tressel. And in my new vinyl revival music section, I'm discussing the comeback of Bombay Bicycle Club. And in film, I'm going to be looking at A Beautiful Day in the Neighbourhood. We also have our weekly section from our friends and colleagues at the Teacher Development Trust. So without further ado, let's get into this week's podcast and start talking to teachers.
Nimmer Snetter, just talking to teachers.
Teacher Development Trust section. Learning from the team at TDT on best practice CPD with research.
Nimmer's Netter, just talking to teachers.
We're here today at TDT Regional CPD Hub in Dover with Associate Polly Butterfield talking about curriculum. Polly, can you tell us a little bit about what's been discussed at today's hub?
Yes, we're really excited about today's hub because there's going to be a focus on curriculum, so driving curriculum and change within teams. It's of course a really topical issue at the moment with the new framework, but tonight we're going to focus on Ofsted's view of the curriculum as one area and then also that driving change within teams during the second part.
Lovely. And why do you think these topics are particularly important at the moment?
Well, of course, Ofsted is focusing on curriculum within the new framework, and there's significant impact on middle leaders and the expectation of middle leaders during the deep dive. We've got lots of colleagues here this evening, senior leaders from other schools who have experienced very recent Ofsteds. So we're looking forward to sharing our intelligence about that, how we're planning to adapt our own CPD with middle leaders so that they are well prepared for this this focus.
Great. What benefits have you seen from teachers and leaders openly discussing their practice with other schools?
Geographically, we're quite isolated on the south coast, you know, in Dover and the surrounding towns. And I think in the past that's led to schools working quite independently and almost being, you know, wary perhaps of sharing and collaborating. But the hubs, we've been running the hub here now for a year, and it's given such a great opportunity for schools to actually come together and to build really strong and safe professional networks to share this kind of intelligence that we've got about Ofsted, but also about the way that we're working with children in this region and how we can contextualise some of that information that we have to suit our particular region of schools.
And what impact do these curriculum changes have on middle leaders?
Well, certainly that curriculum materials need to be really well embedded by middle leaders who have pedagogical expertise in their area. There's also a real drive now, an increase in requests for subject-specific CPD as middle leaders begin to upskill themselves and their teams. But there are other factors, including stability, middle leaders ensuring that teachers can stay where possible with the same class as they go into, across the whole year or even in 2 years over GCSE. Also experience within middle leadership teams, so with more effective middle leaders, almost mentoring those who are new to the role, and the importance of having an induction for middle leaders when they come into the role, and also a shared pedagogy, so across your team of middle leaders, what is going on, what opportunities are there available for them to come together and have a genuinely shared language about the way that things are approached here, in particular the curriculum.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for that, Polly.
So we have Lydia Ward, DT teacher, and John Spray, Assistant Head of Teaching and Learning. Two very different roles and perspectives of people attending the hub today. What are your reflections on what you've heard?
Well, I thought it was really interesting that for the first time, we're talking about Ofsted, which everybody kind of really hates because obviously Ofsted's a scary word and it's, the inspection. But actually, for the first time, Ofsted's framework is about teaching and learning and the curriculum design, which is the core function for school. So I think that's a really useful thing that we talked about, whether it be talking to a head teacher or whether it be talking to other teachers, is learning about curriculum design and that being a real positive of the session.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to see what the steps were for the future and where classroom teaching needed to be, also where classroom planning needed to go to. And it was just nice to be aware of what the expectations were and those new changes that have sort of come in recently.
And do either of you have any plans that you'll take from here back to your schools or for things you want to see at future hubs?
I found it really useful in the sense of actually hearing from a head teacher and senior leaders that have been through an Ofsted inspection, but also then how they are driving CPD in their school, especially with the focus on middle leadership, which I think is kind of the, not only is the really important thing for the Ofsted framework, but it's also something that we as a school really, really need to do, because I think we've identified that as a weakness in certain areas of our school, and it's vital to the curriculum design and curriculum management. So I think that's my main takeaway, and I think that's going to be really useful.
Yeah, I think mine will be sort of looking in our planning and starting to do those few bits of editing that sort of need to happen just to make sure we're hitting at least the base marks and know that we are doing as best we can by the kids, really.
Brilliant. Thank you both so much, John and Lydia.
Thank you.
To hear more about TDT and the services available, including regional hubs in your area, go to www.tdtrust.org.
Naylor's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Teacher Development Trust section, learning from the team at TDT on best practice CPD with research.
Naylor's Netter, just talking to teachers.
Okay, hi Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Hi Phil.
Thanks very much for doing this on a Friday night. Much, much appreciated. So I was just so glad I could get you. It sounds like you've had a busy day.
I have. Yeah, I've been all over the shop today. Yeah, fantastic. It's been good.
Good. We might talk about that a little bit later on. So I'm just going to do my kind of usual gentle introductory question. So you don't really need a great deal of introduction, because obviously a lot of people that listen to the podcast or be on Twitter will be familiar with you from various different things, which we're going to talk about today. But for anybody out there that isn't, just tell us a little bit about kind of your career to this point and what kind of things you're working on at the minute.
My name's Tom. I started out as a history teacher back in 2007. I was working over in a grade school in North Wales, Prestatyn, for the first 5 years of my career as a history teacher. And then I did various different kind of TLR roles within those 5 years. And then in 2013, I moved on to be a head of history over in a school near Warrington Direction. Left that school in 2015, and then I had about 6 months out where I set up my business. I call it a business. I guess I set up my website and various other things. I did a few stints of supply. I did some a bit of kind of, I guess you call it, consultancy. I did bits and pieces, some writing. Started writing for the TES around that time. And then in the summer of 2016, I started my international kind of adventure as a head of history over in a British school in Spain. I did that for 2.5 years, and then I moved to another school in Slovenia at the end of 2018. And then I left that role in September of last year, and since then I've just finished a 6-week contract teaching history at a school in Leicester, Castlemead Academy, which I highly recommend a visit to if you are in the Midlands area and looking for a school to work in. So that's where I've just been, and now I'm kind of just weighing up different options really for myself. Obviously, I still love kind of teaching and always have. There's other elements for me to kind of consider as well, in terms of where, the place, the kind of school, that you know, all those, the usual things. And that's really where I'm at now. Hopefully looking for something permanent for September this year. But again, kind of open to all different options. So that's really where I'm up to.
Brilliant. And obviously you've been so modest there about, you know, you say about business and all the other stuff that you're doing. So, I mean, I mentioned just off the air before we started. So obviously you've had your podcast as well. You've got your website, you've got the writing, you've got the blogs, which I'm a big fan of. And I'm going to talk about a couple of specific blogs later on. So you've got a lot of stuff going on there. So we'll try and go through that as we talk a bit more in the podcast. But the first one really I want to talk to you about is you've had such vast experience and wide experience of different roles in schools. You're kind of the ideal person to ask a question that I'd put to Jill Berry first. It was that, do you think that, you know, with your experience of your journey through classroom teaching, do you think that moving from classroom teaching to leadership, and whether you think that good teachers become naturally good leaders?
The simple answer to that is no, I don't. And the best example of that is me. because I feel, looking back now, that, okay, the teaching side of things, you know, you can have fantastic observation kind of reports, you can achieve great things with your classes and everything else, and then you can kind of dive into a leadership role. And, you know, for me personally, I kind of learned on the job, and by doing that, you're going to make mistakes. And I'm not saying that those mistakes could have been avoided, but certainly I think this applies across the profession. I don't think really there's a lot of kind of focus on the nuts and bolts of leadership and management in early years teachers. There's a presumption that you're a good teacher, you're a good leader, you should go for the CR, but they're completely different things. And I think that for some reason it's seen as natural progression, but they're completely different roles. And I, in my 20s, you know, learned a massive amount through different middle leadership roles. The first one I had was managing 16 staff. It was the skills curriculum. And that was a real challenge because I had highly experienced colleagues and NQTs teaching this curriculum across a massive secondary school, the third biggest school in Wales. Yeah, it was a real challenge creating the curriculum from scratch, trying to get people to buy into the vision that I had and what I was trying to do, managing meetings, observations, feedback, all the things that you would expect. But when you're, you know, mid-20s or whatever, you know, that's a leap, that is. And at the time, I didn't see it. I just saw it as natural progression, but it wasn't, you know. Same experience, really, in the other TLRs that I had there. So the bottom line is, no, I don't think that a good teacher makes a good leader. Sometimes they can, sometimes they don't, but it's certainly not a formula. Does that make sense?
Absolutely makes sense. And I said that Jill and I had a discussion about this as well around, you know, I'm thinking of roles that I've had in the past where, you know, like the AST role, which is something I bang on about quite a lot, but it was a leadership, you know, a path into leadership where you were still in the classroom and you were still sort of sharpening the saw and developing your own practice alongside of a leadership. But it seems that the more that you do move up through leadership, whether it's, you know, the big focus on middle leaders at the moment with the new framework and things like that, and into senior leadership, you know, quite often lessons are the least of your priorities. And you know, that has a knock-on effect. So it's a real difficult thing. If you want to be a good teacher and you want to get some leadership responsibilities, they don't complement each other well.
But that's where I would say that was probably one of my problems or challenges as a middle leader, was that I didn't want to let go of my classroom stuff. I still piled a lot of my energy and time into planning, resourcing lessons and teaching the lessons. And it was still a massive focus for me, which meant that I spent less time on the strategic vision or the strategic plans, and what I ended up doing a little bit, I guess, was kind of firefighting. And then there wasn't that kind of web that tied it all together, and easy trap to fall into. But that's my personal experience. You know, I love teaching, so that's always gonna, you know, it's like, I guess you do what you love doing and you don't want to let that go, you know.
I mean, just a follow-up question, and you know, it's just kind of something that we did discuss with Jill a little bit, but it's just something I've been thinking about recently. You know, obviously your experience of leadership, your experience of a classroom teacher, you know, do you feel as if it's important that particularly your senior leadership, obviously it's integral to the middle leaders' role that they're involved in the department, but do you feel as if, you know, senior leaders should be high quality teachers and should almost be modelling what is expected for the pupils as well as the staff?
Yeah, I do. I think leaders generally, I mean, this is my personal view. This isn't out of some kind of coaching manual or book on leadership. It's just my personal view. My personal view is that, I suppose my personality comes into it is like lead from the front and kind of, just do it, you know. And I guess it's like the analogy of, I guess, in like warfare, you know, like the general in the trenches type thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But in saying all that, you know, practicality-wise sometimes dictates that can't happen, you know, because of time, because of the pressures, you know, that leaders are under. You know, if they don't prioritise other things, then they're going to come unstuck. Mm. Does a leader need to be the best teacher? Absolutely not. I would see a leader's job now, in the way I think, as enabling others and protecting others and developing others and shining a light on them. But it's taken me, I would say, a while, I'm in my 13 years or whatever it is of my career, to understand exactly what that means. And certainly I wouldn't have probably seen it that way, you know, 10 years ago.
No, I mean, I'm coming at the angle from it. It's a fine balance, isn't it? So I've always been, you know, a senior leader. So I'm probably, about 10 or 11 years of being, you know, assistant head and now deputy head, you know, of teaching alongside everything else. And, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but it's kind of the best part of the day. You know, when you know that you've got that year 11 class, I think that that's good.
But you are right,
you know, that the pressures alongside of that probably sometimes mean that your lesson maybe isn't as good as everybody else's, but I think it's important that you're seen to be, as you said, in the trenches with everybody else, you know, doing that alongside, but not to the detriment of those. Sorry.
I don't think it's about the quality necessarily of what you do. I think it's the willingness to kind of put yourself forward, maybe. Might be how you would look at it.
Yeah, definitely right. So just there's no answer to that debate, is that we're going to move on a little bit further, if that's all right. So, you know, you've had such a big impact across the education sector, and like I said, that's kind of reflected in your profile. Okay. listen, it is, in terms of your profile, in terms of, you know, the people that you've spoken to, the things that you've put out there, you know, and Teach Me Icons is, you know, a real force for good in the profession. So tell us a little bit about how you came up with that idea and you know, where we're up to now with Teach Me Icons.
Yeah, so it's a, the idea initially in 2015 was to set up a Teach Me for history teachers. There was kind of a group of us involved at the beginning, including Kate Jones and Sean McDermott and a few others. And I had this idea to set up this Teach Me. I got those guys on board. Lucky that I did, because they're great. And we set up the event. And then, you know, we're on to year five, I think, this year now. It's grown exponentially, the history event, to the point where all 140 tickets went in an hour for this one. What we've also done, what I've also done at the kind of, I guess, executive level is I've now been fortunate to get team leaders who have taken on the different subject areas. So we've got Alex Fairlam in history, Victoria Hewitt in geography, Catherine Darwin in math, Neil Atkin in science, and so on, as Courtney Pettifer in PE, and so on, the list goes on. And Lizzie Harvey on the 1st of February, which is just coming up, the English event, where we've got 90 people coming to that. I think the big thing that I wanted to do at the beginning was create something that's free, because even events that are cheap are not free. You know, there's very little out there that's free, and that's something that the reason that I've managed to achieve that, we've managed to achieve that, is through sponsorship. Companies and individuals who've really supported the idea behind it all. Pupil Progress would be a good example of that. The TES obviously partner with us and do a massive amount of work with us to organise these events. And that's been amazing. And lots of companies have been with us since the word go, like Time Travel Education, Squadjucation, the Beamish Museum have supported us a lot. And the list goes on. That's for history. I mean, other events have different sponsors. OCR, Hodder are with us this year, sponsoring all our events. So Discover the World in Geography. So all of these companies have had a really big impact on the development, and we wouldn't be able to do it for free. It's sponsor funded. Fortunately, I don't think that is to the detriment of the events. You know, I mean, it's certainly not a corporate event. I mean, you can ask anybody who has been to one of our events. It's a genuine Teach Meet event, very inclusive, friendly. And that's a big thing for me as well, is the inclusivity of different pedagogical approaches, different personalities, very welcoming and friendly environment. And we have a free bar, free alcohol in most of the events that we do now, free lunch. You know, it's really, I mean, for me, it's about just saying thanks to the teachers, really, who are on that. I mean, you know, I'm, you know, there's people doing such tough jobs out there in really tough contexts, and anything that anyone can do, I think, to help that situation is a good thing.
No, definitely. And I mean, I prefaced the question by saying about the influence of that. But if you go back to 2015 when you started this,
yeah,
you know, obviously there were teach meets, and you know, there was the, yeah, the embryonic sort of research ed movement was I'll get my times, yeah, wrong, but I remember. But you think that how much you've influenced how that's grown. So I mean, teach meets are massive now, and you know, there's arguments whether they should be on Saturdays or they should be after or whatever it is. But the grassroots movement of people wanting to talk about pedagogy and practice, you know, has started out of, you know, organisations like yours, and it's become such a big thing. You know,
I think it was prior to that with the likes of Ewan McIntosh and the BET Teach Me. You know, yeah. I went to the, yeah, BET Teach Me in, I think it was January 2016. I went to the BET Teach Me. So I think the idea was there, and basically I've really embraced that idea of the Teach Me, and I thought, right, it needs to be free, it needs to be accessible. And I'm very fortunate from the outset that we had speakers who were willing to do it for free as well. Mm-hmm. You know, got to mention Russell Tarr at the beginning. He was our first keynote speaker for TM History Icons, but loads and loads of others followed, and they've been willing to come on board. And now, you know, I mean, the English event coming up, the caliber of the speakers is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And it's not for profit. It's a not for profit thing. Mm-hmm. There's no everything that's any money that's left from sponsorship just goes back into the events. It's that simple, really.
No, it's brilliant. And like I said, I mean, the effect it's had. So, I mean, the school that I'm at now, and I know that it was quite strange this morning because Nikki and Emma, and they won't mind me saying this because they'll be listening to the podcast, no doubt, but they were listeners to the podcast before I went to South Shore Academy. And yeah, it was quite a strange feeling this morning that as I was walking down the English corridor on my morning trip of just round to see people, it was me on the on the speakers coming out of the English classroom. But the reason I'm giving those to a name check is they did a Teach Meet for us last night, you know, along the lines of the kind of things that you started with Teach Meet Icons, and it's just had, yeah, such a positive impact. You know, we had local speakers coming in, you know, yeah, coming to look at the school. We had our students were there showing people around. It was just such a buzz and such positivity, and that's what you brought to the profession, you know, people being enthused about teaching. And that's why it's really, really,
yeah,
important.
I love the days. You know, the days of the events are absolutely amazing. Like, it's just such a good laugh, and everyone has a really good time. So, yeah, it's quality.
Okay, so moving on to more things that you've done in terms of sharing. So your resources have been used by, well, I mean, we've lost count of thousands and thousands of teachers and students. So tell us how important you think it is that resources should be shared, and you know, a lot of your stuff that you share is for free, I think, if not all the stuff you share is for free. And talk about its impact on sort of workload, and I know that's an issue that you're particularly passionate about.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything we can do to pool resources or share resources within teams and online is obviously going to be helpful. I would personally like to see something from government on resources. I think we've got this big curriculum drive at the moment, and I think there's a lot missing, that kind of central point, because what a teacher might tend to do is kind of dig around and go from one place to another place to another place, and it's a real jigsaw. I'm not sure why we don't have just one central point, you know? I don't know. I mean, it's just a thought that I've had more recently. But, yeah, in terms of, like, resource development, I mean, you look at the quality of resources that are being produced on through Twitter, for example, and some of what's being shared is, like, phenomenal. I mean, like, the effort and the how it can be applied, the thought process that's going on into it is, like, phenomenal. I mean, in the history community, it's insane the quality of the resources and the blogs and stuff like that are being produced. Yeah, better than anything I could do, Phil, you know?
but again, you know... Seriously,
I mean, yeah. the quality's there. And across, you look at, like, Lit Drive, yeah, and things like that. I mean, it's unbelievable, the amount of stuff there. So, yeah, I think it's crucial. I think, like I said, having something central would be great, I think, especially for new teachers, with you know, your best quality, if you like, package that they can then tailor themselves. But yeah, that's it, really.
I mean, just another one, and again, I always say this at points in a podcast, and I think, well, I might have to cut these points, but just a flip side of that, you know, and anecdotally, I know of teachers, for example, who, you know, they put a great deal of work into their own resources, and then they put them out onto websites and things like that, and they do ask for money for them. And I know, again, it's just anecdotal stuff, and I'm not going to name names of these kind of things, but, you know, people who have been able to go to a part-time job, which good luck to them, and, you know, flexible working and all that is great, but just on the back of the money generated from selling their resources. So, I mean, do you have a view on that particularly, whether that's, you know, because, like I said...
Yeah, I mean, I sell resources, you know, I sell CPD courses, I sell some teaching resources, not many, but some. I don't have a problem with it. I understand the arguments in terms of the copyright infringements and the stealing of resources. I totally get that, and that's been an issue, and that's obviously completely wrong. But in terms of the actual sale and exchange of goods, I mean, what about books, Phil?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, people are quitting the profession on the back of writing books. No one has a complaint to say about writing an educational book.
Yeah.
People seem to have a lot of complaints about selling educational resources, but none about books.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it just confuses me sometimes. But yeah, I think it's a personal decision, isn't it? And I think everyone's entitled to their opinion on it. And yeah, I've got no problem with any of the opinions on it, really.
No.
I think they're all valid.
No. Well, I got to say, I came down on your side of the argument for that. So, I mean, I have bought resources, and I do consistently buy from some particular people, because the quality of what they're producing and the effort that they've put into that, and it kind of links out just a personal view, again, as all things are on here. But, you know, linking it back to what we talked about in terms of leadership and time and preparation, I want my students to have the best possible lessons. And if it can save some time putting things together, you know, and use somebody else's experience. Obviously, I tailor it, I tweak it, you know, I do all those kind of things, but I don't have a problem with it at all, because teachers are working extremely hard out there to prepare things, so sharing it across the profession. And you're right about books. I hadn't thought about that, but you're absolutely right. It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so just moving on to your blogs. So, I mean, before I started a new job, I dug out, I'm sure you remember the blog, so Nightmares and Dreams... was the blog that I dug out. So, how relevant do you think that still is, and particularly for people that are starting new jobs or new teachers to the profession?
Well, I did a video last week about four teachers who are going back, and I think it's a really tough time. In fact, I think January is just a tough time in general. And I think people really, really struggle, like, the night before going back, and it's something I've had massive problems with in the past. When I've been working in environments that have been really, really tough in terms of workload and so on. And I just think you can get to that point where you're dreading it on a Sunday night, and you have those nightmares, you have sleepless nights. You can't fall asleep because things are just churning around in your head. I guess you get it into your head that it matters so much what you do in the classroom, and that is true. But you have to put a limit on it. You have to put a cap on it. Because if you don't, you can just let it dominate your life. And obviously some schools don't help with that, because they'll pile the pressure on top of what you already feel yourself. Because teachers are the worst enemies in terms of putting pressure on themselves. Certainly, I've done that in the past. The blog, that particular blog, was just about that feeling of when you're dreading going back and what that feels like, and what you can try and do to tackle it.
I mean, I've worked in two brilliant schools recently where they've had a sort of an email policy around holidays, around evenings, around weekends. And I think that really does help to ease that. I mean, you're always going to get the nerves going back, and, you know, especially if you're starting somewhere new or a different role or responsibility. But not having that email ping sort of on the Friday or the Saturday at the end of the Christmas holidays does really make a difference. And yes, you get a lot of emails coming in at right inbox at 7:01 on first thing on the Monday morning, but by that stage you're already in school anyway, and there's not a great deal you can do about it. So I think that in terms of staff well-being, I think email curfews are really, really good.
I mean, I suppose the flip side of that is that I guess I wouldn't check the email, and I guess the freedom to check it when you want to check it can be quite good as well, but I totally agree. I mean, I think both sides of that have merits. I guess it's just seeing the results of it, isn't it? I know Sam Strickland does that. He's very, anti-emails over weekends and evenings and so on. And I see that point completely. I also see the flip side of it, the counter arguments about people saying, I like the freedom to be able to do my work when I want to do my work.
Yeah, I mean, my previous head teacher, Simon, he had a view on that. So that we installed, we have St Mary's had a kind of Google Drive approach to things. So you could draft emails if you wanted to draft emails. You could be flexible to work when you wanted to work, but as long as that was sent on a delay and it didn't interfere with anybody else. Because I did a piece for Ross at Teacher Toolkit around, I remember once, and my child one, as I like to call him in public. He's never forgiven me for missing his first goal when he was about 6 or 7 in a football match, because I got the dreaded ping of the phone, whilst he's in the middle of the game. And then it was typical. Those who know me, it was typical me. It was a data deadline that I'd missed, and it was due for Monday. It was one of those, you've missed the deadline. This needs to be in. So that feeling of dread, and you can't concentrate on anything else.
I mean, that's not helpful. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, been there, got the t-shirt.
Yeah, but that blog, if people haven't read that blog, I mean, that is first, I mean, there's loads of great blogs, but that's really one that I go back to time and time again, just to kind of feel that I'm not alone in feeling that.
Oh, that's great to hear. Thanks, Phil. Glad it helped in some way.
It absolutely did. And speaking of things that we enjoy, so I know I spoke to Kate Jones as well, friend of the show here, but she did a live podcast with you, and I've said to you off air, how you can dare to do that. I mean, I've tuned into it a few times when you've done that, and I hope it's going to continue. I hope you're going to keep doing that, but just the sheer bravery in going live on Twitter, I dread it. I mean, again, another anecdote for you, Tom, I probably shouldn't say, but David Weston won't mind me sharing, so I'm not very good I'm not very good on technology. So he once asked me to come along and say some tips and words at one of the TDT Trust meetings, the board meetings. But I assumed it would be audio Skype. So you can imagine the scene as I'm sat there in the pyjamas at the dinner table, with a bowl of cereal or whatever it was, when I press the button and press the link, and bang, I'm straight in the room, oak-panelled room in London, dressed in pyjamas. It was quite the experience.
That's a decent story.
Sadly, it's a true story as well. So David will attest to that. It was quick press. What button can to get it off? So I'm scared to death of doing a live podcast.
I blame David Weston completely for that.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, I do too. But and they were nice pyjamas. In fairness, they were quite nice.
You know? Decent.
It was the Grinch, so they were quite nice. Anyway, so I mean, tell us a little bit about the podcast. What kind of things you talk about? Is it coming back? Is it going to be continuing? And have you got any guests lined up?
Yeah, it kind of went on hiatus a little bit due to obviously the kind of work situation I've had, just lots of changes. So the podcast kind of went on the back burner. I'd like to bring it back 2020. I'd like to start, I put an episode out last week. I'd like to start doing regular episodes again. Soon. It's good. I enjoy doing it. I had some good feedback off it. I just want to keep going with it, really. But you're the podcast man, Phil.
Well, I mean,
you're the podcast master.
Just to say thanks for that. I mean, I never have I been so popular as when I got onto the educators to follow. And even kids at school were singing a theme tune down the corridor at me. I mean, they don't listen to the podcast, obviously. But once I'd made it onto the list there, I thought it was great. And
Phil, please don't mention Listgate on your podcast again.
I'm only mentioning it for positive reasons, to say that I was very grateful.
There you go.
Whatever anybody thinks about it, I was very grateful to be involved, and I liked a lot of people on there. And yes, whatever you think about that,
yes,
well, that's up to you. But yeah, yes, I was grateful. And
very diplomatic. Thank you, Phil.
Well, yes, we do try. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing how it's gone on this podcast. And I know what you mean about maintaining that around a work situation. So I'm grateful to guests that we could do things like Friday nights and try and work around it. Because, you know, I love doing it. It's the best kind of CPD. And you probably, you know, you feel the same. When you get to speak to people like yourself, people like Kate, you know, I come away enthused from those conversations. So it's great that people listen. But if I was just doing it to have a conversation with you, I'd still be doing it.
Agreed.
So back to the blogs again. So your most recent two blogs, so you've got The Journey and The Dark Side of International Teaching, have been really emotive and really gripping reading. So could you just tell us a little bit about your thought process in deciding to work abroad and what you feel you gained from that process?
Yeah, I gained massively from it. I mean, going back to December 2015, I had my 6 months out, and within that period there, I wanted to return to the classroom. I fully intended to leave. When I'd initially left that job in December 15, I wasn't even going to go back to teaching. And it was only really after a few months that I was like, you know what, I love it, I miss it. And then I thought, you know what, let's try something different. Let's go international. You know, it's kind of a I've got nothing to lose moment kind of thing. I got the job in Spain. Got out there, drove my Vauxhall Corsa all the way to Spain from Liverpool, unpacked, and off we went. And Vigo was just an amazing place. I mean, it's just, I've met some amazing people there. You know, some of my favourite people in the world are from Vigo, and I met in Vigo. And it's just an amazing city with just such a good vibe about it. And it's kind of a very traditional Spanish city, really. It's a bit out the way, you know. It's which is brilliant, because it just adds to the charm of the place. And loads of beaches, bars, you know. Just a completely different lifestyle to the estate I was living on in St. Helens. Just an amazing 2.5 years in Spain. And then Ljubljana, very similarly, is a beautiful city as well. So in terms of the lifestyles of international teaching, I mean, for me, it was less workload, you know, and more autonomy. And I'd say they're the key reasons a lot of people go out there. I know if you've read any blogs by Freya Adel, she's in Rome now, but she talks a lot about the switch to international. And, you know, and I know Kate Jones, who was on your podcast out there in the Middle East, she's having a cracking time out there in the Middle East. So I think you're struggling to find people who have had negative experience of international teaching. But that was the reason I felt like writing the blog that I wrote the other week on the dark side of international teaching was really necessary, because you don't tend to hear as much about that, partly because obviously a lot of the there's a lot of money going into recruitment in international scene. And obviously it would probably run parallel to that if you were to start talking about some of the bad stories, and there are wild, wild west situations out there, with very little regulation, very little protection for employees. It can be, I mean, you've probably read some of the stories in that blog. It can be really, really tough, really tough. And you got to remember, you're away from home as well. You might not have your friends, family. You might end up in an awful situation with no one to turn to, really. And your only option is to pack up and go. And if you've committed your entire life, you pack your whole life up to go somewhere, that's a difficult one.
Mm. Absolutely. And I think that, I mean, you know, in previous roles, I was responsible for NQCs, ITTs, Teach First, that kind of thing. And, you know, you do see when they get to the end of certain periods that this is quite an appealing thing to do, you know, from a monetary point of view, as well as an experience point of view. So, you know, I know it's a difficult thing to blanket advice and it's very personalised, but what kind of things would you say to sort of newer teachers who are thinking about what kind of things should they consider?
I mean, personally, I would. This is, again, a personal thing. I would want to get my NQT done in the UK, I think. That would be me. I'd like to just get that year experience in the UK under my belt before going international. But I've seen it work for NQTs, you know, going out there and doing it. But certainly I'd be asking questions of the international school about who's the mentor, what is the professional development package, you know, what support am I going to get? How are you auditing it? Check on the COBIS database to check the school can give you the NQT certificate. So there's lots of things there that I would do just to check if you're planning to do that. But I think getting that UK experience and grounding is really positive.
No, absolutely. Right, just moving tack slightly. So, I mean, quite often, and I mean, you must have this experience, Tom, more than me, but I get to a lot of the research ed events and you think, you know, I know this person, I've seen this person, you know, I've talked to that person, and it's all a bit of a melting pot and, you know, you don't get to go and say hello to people all the time. But it was quite funny when I was still at St Mary's before Christmas and, you know, as I'm strolling past Stephen Tierney, a.k.a. Leading Learner's office, there you are. So I thought, oh, well, there you were on your tour of, not just Blackpool. I know you did go to Blackpool, and we'll talk about that in a minute with Graham and Chris, which was great as well. But what you did, and you interviewed a lot of school leaders. So, I mean, if we could go through little bits of that in terms of what kind of things you took away from that and how you'd signpost people to find those. Because I think they're still available, aren't they, those interviews?
They are. So they're on YouTube. I did another one today, episode 8, with Sonia Thompson in Birmingham, which is well worth listening to. They're all on YouTube. It's just been a really amazing experience. Like, I just started it like I do most things, like really casually. Like, oh, I quite like to interview. And I thought of a couple of names, and I thought of Catherine Burwell-Singh, Georgina Young, and a few others. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go and interview them. And I'm just going to do it casually and do it as a live event on Periscope. And then I was like, you know what, I really like this format. And I had some really good feedback. And it was useful for me as well. I did it really from a selfish point of view to begin with. Mm-hmm. Like, what can I get out of this from learning from them and asking these questions? I was interested, you know, because to take Catherine as an example, you know, she's just so interesting. And I was like, I want to, you know, I wanted to go for that interview, you know what I mean? It wasn't even about putting it out online or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, you know, a lot of other people had the same feeling of, oh, I'm quite interested in this. And then it kind of sprang from there. I was like, oh, I'll do a few more. And as I said, I'm up to number 8 now. It's been great. And as I said, learned a lot. Mm-hmm.
So if we just take a couple of examples. So we'll start with Catherine, with the first example. I'm saying Catherine like I know her. I mean, I shouldn't be so presumptuous as to say that. But I have tried to email her about, you know, getting her on as a guest, but I know how much in demand she is. So if you're listening, you know, feel free to reply to her emails. But that's a shameless plug that I shouldn't probably be putting in there. But, you know, a huge fan of everything that she's done with Michaela and everything else. And Pritesh, who teaches at Michaela, was an early guest on the podcast, and he's just fantastic. I mean, you know, the intellect, the quality of his teaching, it's first class. So tell us a little bit about what you kind of got from that interview with Catherine.
Just how interesting as a person, as a leader, the strength of conviction, the strength of the kind of bravery, I think, in many respects, to do what she's done, and just having those strong opinions and being able to express them, and just, this is what I think, and a lot of what I mean, personally, I agree with a lot of what Catherine says. I think she has a lot of really interesting things to add to any debate around education. It's just that strength of boldness, directness. I think that's what stands out for me with Catherine Burwell-Singh.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I know that obviously lots of listeners will be familiar with that work and obviously her books and things like that, so you can find out some more. Just dragging it back to Blackpool, as I always like to do, you know, shamelessly, because we're proud of that. So you went to St George's with Graham Graham and Chris, who are both just doing superb work in Blackpool there, and really, you know, getting the culture right, but also getting their outcomes right as well. And you know, they're doing really great work for the kids of Blackpool, as a lot of the schools are all trying to.
With Graham and Chris, it's that, you know, the big word that struck me from them was humility. They are really down to earth and just like trying to do the best job they can, and that just comes across. They're not saying, "Oh, we've got the answers. We're doing this, we're doing that." It's like, yeah, we're trying to do this and we're having some success with it. This is where we're up to. And it's just honest and humble from them. When I went to visit them, I was just so impressed with them, you know.
And they're so generous with their time. I mean, I've been fortunate to be in and out with the TDT over the last 3 years, but we did our final audit, so it was quite emotional before Christmas, when I was kind of tying up the project before I moved on. And they all came along to the meeting, and, you know, you can think, imagine the day-to-day pressures that school leaders are under in terms of things to do, but, you know, you felt as if they had all the time in the world to talk to you, you know, to sit down and just go through what kind of things they're trying to do. And they're just fabulous people doing really great work in, you know, in what can be sometimes quite a challenging context.
Definitely.
So if anyone does get on YouTube and see the interview with Graham and Chris has done a podcast with me as well. It's really, really good.
Oh, there you go. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of good stuff. I mean, I was with him last night at the another plug for the South Shore Teach Meet last night, but Chris was there talking about culture as well. So, you know, have a look at that one. And of course, I can't let a leading learner off, can I? So can I tell you another? I'm full of anecdotes. That must be because it's Friday, Tom. I must be all excited at the end of the week. But
you had a few beers afterward, didn't you? That's what it was.
For the purposes of the podcast, no, I didn't. There we go. But anyway, it was quite strange because you were in the room interviewing Stephen, and Simon Cox and I were literally behind you in the office or research school cupboard, as we called it, watching it on Twitter. So it was brilliant. We were actually watching it in the other room. So I mean, that was a really good interview, wasn't it? As well.
Yes, I mean, all of them have been fantastic. They really have. I mean, as I said, Stephen was brilliant, and I mean, knowledge is the thing with Steve. I mean, the knowledge he has of the education sector and the way it works and different facets of it is like, it's fascinating, you know, to listen to it. And it's some of his answers, I was like, wow, like your knowledge base is just supreme, you know. So that was awesome, to meet him. And just big admirer of his blogs and what he does, really. It's good to meet him.
And how he manages it, you know, in terms of leading a school, he's been doing everything else. And you know, I can say this now that I'm not directly working with him, you know, everything that you see outside in public is everything he does in school. You know, he's completely, he's exactly the same as he appears to be on that. And, you know, he was brilliant to be a head teacher and then executive head teacher. And, you know, I was very fortunate to kind of develop under him for quite a few years. So I'm hoping to get him on as a guest now, but I'll feel a bit too nervous. I feel like it's an appraisal. So I probably best, let's get ready for that one. Okay, so enough of me and anecdotes. So, in terms of, we talked at the beginning, so where do you see yourself, you know, you talked a little bit about what kind of schools you want to work in, but where do you see yourself teaching next? And is it a teaching job that you want, or are you looking to get back into kind of leadership? What's kind of next for you?
I don't know, Phil, to be honest with you. I'm really open to everything at the moment. As I said, I love teaching. There's no doubt about that. So, I'm really open at the moment. I'm trying to work it out, basically. Yeah.
Well, while you're doing that, I know that you're out and about speaking quite a lot at various different things. So if you just kind of signpost listeners for where they can find out a little bit more about you, so in terms of your blog, in terms of your website, in terms of where you're going to be speaking in the next...
Yeah, I think I've got something. I'm speaking at a Brewed event on Saturday the 8th of February, Brewed Northampton, organised by Neil Black. I'm really looking forward to that, speaking alongside loads of great people, actually, at that event. I can't wait for that. I'll be at the TM English Icons event on Saturday the 1st of Feb. I'm not speaking at that, but I'll be doing some hosting and kind of organising and so on, and just supporting Liz Harvey, who's the organiser of that event. And then I'll be at the Maths event, 22nd of February. And I've got a few other things that I'm going to be doing that I can't announce yet, but I'm going to be speaking at another couple of events in February and March, so looking forward to those. And
and will we be seeing you at Research Ed Rugby? Will you be getting down there again?
Oh, possibly, yeah. I'm going to see. I mean, if I'm in the area, I'd definitely love to pop in and say hello, yeah.
Because that was a really good one last year. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, but that one was where I called Sam Strickland Statham, the Stathamator.
Oh, you did.
It, like, trended on Twitter, didn't it? Everyone was like, you can't call him Jason Statham because that's... Yeah, I can't remember what the argument was, but yeah, all hell broke loose.
Well, I think he does look a bit too much like that, doesn't he? And he's actually, in a nice end to the podcast, he's actually next week's guest. So I was lucky enough to record one with him. Yeah, we were talking about his new book, and he's just brilliant. I listened to
that book, only the whole podcast.
Oh,
the
but it's so good for me as somebody that now that's, part of mine is looking at behaviour. That's my kind of whole school responsibility. So people like Sam are just great to listen to, and the book's really, really good as
Definitely.
Well. So that's great.
Definitely.
Okay, well, I just want to say thank you so much, Tom, for giving up your Friday night to speak to us. Really, really appreciated. And, hope we're going to continue with all the things that you're doing. And I hope to see you, around events fairly soon. And, if the podcast is back up and running, I'll definitely be tuning into that as well.
Thanks, Phil. Cheers. Thanks, mate.
Cheers, Tom.
Nailers, Netter, just talking to teachers.
Podcast pedagogy. What is Phil reading this week? Podcast pedagogy. Listening to teachers.
Nailers, Netter, just talking to teachers.
Following my review last week of George Orwell's Road to Wigan Pier, I have naturally gravitated towards a book that Orwell himself described as one that everyone should read. And the book in question is The Ragged Trouser Philanthropists by Robert Noonan, under his pen name of Robert Tressel. And this book was published posthumously following Noonan's death from tuberculosis in 1914. The novel tells the story of a house painter who's struggling to find work for himself and protect his family from grinding poverty and the threat of the workhouse. And this book is similar in theme to Orwell's work and provides a comprehensive look at social, political, economic and cultural life in Britain in the early 20th century. And this book advocates a socialist society in which work is performed to satisfy the needs of the many and not the few. I'm aware that I am veering dangerously into political reviews in this podcast, so please feel free to ignore or unsubscribe, but I felt that the themes in this book were about not questioning the status quo, being unable to consider an alternative to our current situation, and the derision and hatred directed at the very people trying to help echo loudly into 2020. And it also chimed with what I believe to be a laudable move towards a knowledge-rich curriculum in teaching, and the development of knowledgeable citizens is more important than ever. So if I could heartily recommend this book to any listener who has yet to read it, please seek it out, and here in my view is an extremely pertinent quote from the book. So what we call civilization, the accumulation of knowledge which has come down to us from our forefathers, is the fruit of thousands of years of human thought and toil. It is not the result of the labour of our ancestors or any separate class of people who exist today, and therefore it is by right the common heritage of all. Every little child that is born into this world, no matter whether he is clever or not, whether he is physically perfect or not, and no matter how much he may excel or fall short of his fellows in other respects, there is one thing he is of their equal. That is, he is the heir of all ages of knowledge that have gone before. So The Ragged Trousered Philanthropist is published by Wordsworth Classics and is available everywhere. So into what I'm hesitating to call the vinyl revival music section, which apparently seems popular with listeners on Twitter, so I'm going to continue. And again, it's to encourage us all to have more variety in our busy teacher lives. So I'm going to look at Everything Else Has Gone Wrong, which is the latest album by the Bombay Bicycle Club. So as we've established on previous podcasts, I'm quite a fan of indie music. So for indie fans like me, we weren't expecting another Bombay Bicycle Club album. And for those not familiar with their work, they took a break in 2014 following their brilliant album So Long, See You Tomorrow. And they announced that they were going on what they called an indefinite hiatus. And the band started pursuing other projects. So the members of the group have been keeping themselves really busy over the last three years. So frontman Jack Steadman, who, if you see him, is a personal style icon for me, and bassist Ed Nash, both released solo albums as Mr. Jukes and Toothless, respectively. So the lore of the 10-year anniversary brought the band back together, and the recording sessions that followed became this album. So the comeback single, Eat, Sleep, Wake, Nothing But You, was a brilliant reminder of Bombay Bicycle Club at their best. Follow-up single, I Can Hardly Speak, is jangly, jingling indie rock with a great bass line, and the title track is a catchy number reminding us of their monumental Carry Me. Get Up is an invigorating mix of saxophone, pounding guitar and amazing layered harmonic vocals. And Everything Else Has Gone Wrong boosts the band's trademark sound with some new, fresh ideas. And, you know, you could argue that Everything Else may have gone wrong in 2020, but it is great to have Bombay Bicycle Club back. So in film this week, I'll be checking out the new film Casting the Man, the legend, Mr. Tom Hanks. It's A Wonderful Day in the Neighbourhood. So watch this space for reviews of that next week. Into the shameless plug section. So we have Research Ed Birmingham, Research Ed Blackpool, and Research Ed Rugby coming up in the next few months. And we also have some guest presenters of Nailers Natter coming up to ease the load for me. As I've mentioned previously, I don't know if I have mentioned, that obviously I am quite busy at the moment, so anything we can do to help with getting Nailers Natter out each and every week for you is what we're going to do. So we've got brilliant guest presenters. So Jude Hunton will be presenting a podcast in the next couple of weeks, but he's recording it live this weekend from Educating Links. Emma Turner is interviewing Sam Twistleton, and I know that Catherine Morgan is working hard in the background, getting some interviews together with her colleagues at Ambition. So next week on Nailers Natter, we have Chris Moyes on appraisal and growing teachers. We have a review of the book, The Volunteer, by Jack Fairweather. And we have a delve into Blossom's new album. And as we mentioned, a look at A Wonderful Day in the Neighbourhood in the film section. So thank you for listening as always. And if we'd like to give some feedback, do that via Twitter or do that via giving a review on iTunes and like and subscribe to the podcast. Once again, thank you for listening to Nailers Natter, and see you next time.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA1977 on Twitter.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.